Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Charles Hall, Precinct 4 candidate. Your commissioner should respect you. First, I would like to say thank you to the Midland Reporter-Telegram for providing the opportunity to address the issues with the voters in this forum. I am Charles Hall, also known as Charlie to many. I have resided in Midland since 1984 and was one of your county constables for 20 years. I have been married to Linda for 39 years and have two daughters that both reside in Precinct 4. I am running for Midland County Commissioner of Precinct 4 because I feel the taxpayers need to have someone who will represent them, not just voting with the majority. I feel that the residents of the precinct need to have a voice in the votes of the court. I would listen to the residents and carefully consider the needs of the entire county when voting. I understand that my vote would impact the county residents, which includes my entire family. I have identified three specific issues I feel I could have an impact. Water in the county is an important issue that has been discussed. Clean, drinkable water is a reasonable standard in our society, and the commissioners have been in conversations to get potable water to all residents. The county has grant funds available that will pay for more than 90% of the water project. There are areas in the county where the water is not fit to drink. County property taxes will be used to fund the last 10% of the project, assuring that everyone has access to clean, drinkable water. I would like the opportunity to work with the court to assure that this project is completed in an efficient and timely manner. The court has already started a project involving road repairs. I want to assure that all roads are maintained. For the residents of Midland County, I would like the opportunity to work with the commissioners to assure that we do not slow down the work on the roads, ensuring that all of Midland County have well-maintained roads. The Horseshoe is an excellent facility used by many organizations. The reality is that for the last 6 out of 10 years, it has run in the red. There may be circumstances such as COVID-19 where this facility runs at a deficit, but the Horseshoe should bring enough revenues to break even in the majority of years. I believe that the contract that was signed prior to Judge Johnson's first term needs to be reviewed and assure that the county is getting its proportionate share of the revenues. Falling back on my experience as constable, I have the knowledge of how our county government works and would be able to immediately step up and begin working for the taxpayers. I am asking for your vote for Midland County Commissioner, Precinct 4. Randy Prude, Precinct 4 candidate. Thankful for the trust Midlanders have in me. Thankfulness is the word that best describes my feelings about the confidence and trust Midlanders have given me to represent you these past 24 years. In turn, I have worked diligently to return that trust each day by first of all treating you like I would want to be treated. Secondly, I have made sure you received courteous and timely help whenever you called or spoke to me around the community. When I first came to court, the county was essentially out of funds and raising property tax rates around 32 cents per $100 valuation. The employees hadn't received raises in 10 years and the morale was deplorable. Since that day, I have led the charge to lower the tax rate to the lowest in Texas, along with great colleagues, around 15 cents, which is 1/4 of the state average. When the excellent oil and gas and service companies started prospering from the blessings of the black gold God put underneath our feet, and the sales taxes began to increase, we have been able to build a sorely needed state-of-the-art courthouse with no debt and for 1/4 of the cost per foot that Austin and others spent building their new courthouses, around $125 per foot versus $500. Citizens can now park directly across the street from our courts, and there are plenty of seats for jury duty. We also built award-winning libraries, a fantastic horseshoe, annex, and other facilities with no debt. We shared our sales tax revenue with the other tax entities, allowing them to receive ambulances, a new fire truck, safer schools, access to internet for all residents regardless of economic status, bonuses for hospital workers who were amazing during the COVID plague, joint roads with the city that needed much improvement, and many other projects, more than $40 million, which allowed them to keep their tax rates lower, and many of these projects are ongoing. We still have a healthy reserve for future rainy days and will not need to raise our property tax rates for the foreseeable future. Our only debt is a small one on a past jail expansion that you approved and could be paid off today if not for prepayment penalties. The county's total debt is around $8.5 million, representing 1% of Midland's total debt. On a more personal note, I have had the privilege of actively serving on the boards of the Museum of the Southwest, Teen Court, Honor Our Troops, and most recently the Field's Edge, which is nearing its grand opening and providing home for our first 10 homeless neighbors. I have served as a CASA for 15 years and been able to shepherd 8 abused and neglected children to safe and permanent homes. I have helped start a mental health court, veterans court, and drug court with our outstanding district judges. Another first-time practice is inviting more than 1,000 of your children and grandchildren to our court for special recognition and encouragement from kindergarten through college. I started the summer internship, county government essay contests, and an employee health clinic with the incredible creativity and backing from our department heads and fellow commissioners. Now for the ask. Would you give me 4 more years to finish the extremely important tasks we have been working on and are nearing completion on some, such as roads, finishing the southern loop around Midland, providing water for the first time to county residents, an expanded jail and law and JP offices, a mental health facility, and most importantly, making sure they can be built with little or no property tax burden, just as we have done for 24 years. If property taxes or new sales taxes are needed, you will be the final decision makers by an election. Again, thanks for the opportunity, confidence, and trust you have placed in me for these past 6 terms. I intend to continue my practice of donating 100% of my take-home salary to those in need, especially those who are trafficked here and around the world. I humbly ask for your vote on March 1 and look forward to 4 more years. For additional info, please go to my website, randyprude.com.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Odessa American, Sunday, February 27th. This is the opinion section. This column is called Guest View. It is entitled, Landgraf is a Proven Asset to Texas, by Mayor Flora Braley. Flora Braley is mayor of Andrews. Representative Brooks Landgraf has been an incredible voice for Andrews. We are so sad that our county will no longer be in House District 81 because Brooks has always worked hard for us. His proven leadership and his knowledge of our region and its unique needs has been an asset to the city of Andrews and the region. Regardless of whether Andrews is in his district, I know Brooks will continue to fight for what is best for Andrews and the Permian Basin. I know Andrews can count on his continued support. Brooks has fought hard to bring state revenues generated in West Texas back to West Texas. Not only has he fought hard against recapture, which takes funds away from our school district, he has also been instrumental in increasing funding for much-needed repairs to our region's roadways. When COVID-19 hit, Brooks and his staff were incredibly helpful in providing the city and county with information and resources from the state. It was a dark time, but having strong representation at the Texas Capitol was a bright light during those difficult times. Brooks has always been serious about communicating with and serving his Andrews County constituents. Every step of the way, Brooks has stood for West Texas values, supporting efforts to protect the unborn, secure the border, and defend Permian Basin energy jobs. I know I am not alone when I wish him and his family all the best as Andrews County comes under a new House district in 2023. Until then, we are thankful to have Brooks Landgraf as our state representative. This is Letter to the Editor. Hayes is a proven leader in Ector County. Why Judge Debbie Hayes? This may be a question you are asking yourself, and if you would allow me, I would like to help you answer it. Debbie Hayes has been a successful businesswoman for several years, as well as a leader in the community. She was serving her second term as president of the Ector County Republican Women, which had enjoyed significant growth under her leadership when it became known that the Ector County judge had decided not to run again. Serving as county judge was not on her list of things to do. But after being approached by friends and several community members who encouraged her to run, Debbie, with her husband Dwayne, began to consider the possibility of her running, and after seeking divine direction, the decision was made. Her overwhelming win in the 2018 primary with 63% of the vote was further evidence that her decision had been the right one. The first victory the new judge experienced was to convince the residents who lived in the county to vote to approve the Ector County Assistance District, a sales and use tax at a rate of 1.25%. The new tax was expected to add approximately $16 million annually to the county coffers. The money was earmarked to be used to improve living conditions in the county, from roads to increased law enforcement. An attempt to pass the ECAD had failed the previous year. Judge Hayes' leadership is not only recognized locally, but when the newly formed Permian Basin Regional Freight Plan Advisory Committee was formed, the judge was selected by the commissioner of the Texas Transportation Commission to chair the committee. The freight plan encompasses 22 Texas counties, and its purpose is to develop a multimodal freight plan to improve safety and mobility throughout the Permian Basin. Judge Hayes, as CEO of the Commissioner's Court, has had her detractors. When the court voted unanimously to issue a $25 million obligation of debt to build a new juvenile center, Judge Hayes was criticized because this issue was not voted on by the citizens. These at-risk students need more immediate attention than was afforded by waiting for an election. The projected center will be more than a lockup. It is to be a rehabilitation center. Vocational trades will also be offered so students can learn applicable skills to improve their chance of a successful return to community. When we learned that Judge Hayes was considering not filing for a second term because of her mother's failing health with a diagnosis of cancer, many of us were very distressed and began praying for her mother and for the judge to have a change of heart. Judge Hayes watched for a qualified, credible candidate to announce, but none came forth. She waited until the last day before filing, and in the interim, prayers were answered, and a good report was received from the doctor treating her mom. This is only a brief glimpse of the success of our Ector County judge, and I look forward to seeing the continued progress that she and the Ector County Commissioner's Court will make in the future. Signed, R. Jolene Hawkins, Odessa. This is the Other Voices page. This is Letters to the Editor. Landgraf remains the best candidate. I'm writing today to talk about our friend State Representative Brooks Landgraf. Like us, he has a heart for community service, a heart for West Texas. So we have had the opportunity to work with him on several fronts over the years. Brooks is a West Texas conservative, and his voting record proves it. He has supported every major Republican effort during his time as a state representative, from expanding Second Amendment rights and securing the border to protecting the unborn and everything in between. He is also a fighter for the Permian Basin, having worked hard to increase transportation funding from $50 to $360 million per year and provide more law enforcement resources for our county and region. All of the orange barrels around here are a sign of significant progress, and TxDOT has reported that fatal accidents are down by 32% over the last 3 years in the region. We were with Brooks at a meeting here in Kermit with local law enforcement just a few weeks ago, where he continued to demonstrate his commitment to back the blue and find solutions to improve public safety in the Permian Basin. He passed a bill just last session to give our sheriffs the ability to enforce commercial motor vehicle safety standards. As busy as he might be, he always has time to take our calls and is involved in our community. I know he represents three other West Texas counties, but that hasn't kept Brooks from being there for us when we need help from the state. Brooks is always quick to act on our behalf. We've been disappointed by all of the negative campaigning that has taken place this year, and we are thankful Brooks has not gotten into the mud. We worry that if Republicans continue to violate President Reagan's 11th commandment to not speak ill of a fellow Republican, we only make ourselves weaker as things continue to change in Texas and potentially start trending more Democrat. We need to stand behind strong representatives like Brooks Landgraf, a West Texas Republican in charge of the powerful House Environmental Regulation Committee, if we want to have the voice we deserve in the halls of the Texas Capitol Building. As chair of this committee, Brooks is on the front line protecting Texas energy jobs from the Biden administration. Chairman Landgraf is the sort of leadership the Permian Basin needs. We look forward to continuing to work with Representative Brooks Landgraf and hope that he continues to rise in the ranks in the Texas House so that our voice only grows stronger. Signed, Hope Fernandez Williams, Councilwoman. Guzman would be great on Supreme Court. Biden will appoint a woman to the Supreme Court. Being an avowed racist, Biden will appoint a black woman who in turn will be a racist. The better choice should be a woman who is qualified personally and professionally superior to anyone Biden selects. That woman, IMHO, is Judge Eva Guzman. Her parents immigrated here legally and became citizens legally. She served as a trial judge on the 309th District Court, the 14th Court of Appeals, and judge on the Texas Supreme Court. Appointed to the courts, then continually reelected. A judge for over 22 years, over 11 years on the Texas Supreme Court, over 30 years legal career. Her father was killed by an illegal alien, never captured. Her husband was a police officer for 29 years. You can read up on her positions on all the issues, and I think you would support her for Biden's selection, not a radical leftist. Right now, she is running for Texas Attorney General. Judge Guzman's only drawback, you may say, is that she is a conservative Republican. By the way, shouldn't make a difference, but she is Hispanic. Signed, Jimmy Edwards, Odessa. Fawcett is the best for Ector County. Dustin Fawcett is the best choice for Ector County. I had not met Dustin prior to this campaign, but had heard talk about this energetic young man who seemed to be involved in various organizations and involved with all of our local governments. I really got to know Dustin when he came knocking on my door in freezing cold weather back in January on a Saturday morning. We had an incredible visit, and all I can say is, wow. During that visit, I remembered the young man who assisted me in a case I was working on for one of our staff in Abilene. The Kirk's son was having difficulty getting a special needs van who suffered from brittle bone disease. It was Dustin who gained access to an adaptive vehicle for Drew Kirk to use to go to college. When this young man passed away a few years later, Dustin had a plaque and Texas flag prepared and sent to his funeral services to be presented to his parents, honoring Drew's service to the special needs community. In this, I personally experienced Dustin's compassion and dedication for others. Dustin understands this community. Dustin understands what it will take to heal our community from division and make our community whole again. Dustin has the compassion lacking in the present leadership. Since that day, I have heard him speak at the Downtown Lions Club, at the Ector County Republican Party Forum, and in several other public presentations. And what I can tell you is that any question you ask of him, he has a competent and brilliant answer. At one of the forums where the audience was able to offer questions, several were planted from his opponent's campaign, with the audience members reading scripted questions straight off of their phone. Dustin handled each of them with grace and knowledge without missing a beat. His experience in Austin and throughout our region on public policy is truly amazing. I implore you to ask him about it. He has worked with elected officials, including our U.S. Congressman Pfluger, State Representative Landgraf, Senator Seliger, as well as all of our entities, whether it's the City Council, County Commissioner's Court, Hospital District, or Ector County ISD. Again, don't take my word for it. Ask any member of these entities or elected officials to tell you about Dustin, and I am sure they will say the same great things. The same cannot be said of his opponent. She doesn't answer questions, whether from the press, other elected officials, or even constituents. I was sad to hear about the canceling of the First Basin PBS debate. But since that time, they offered her 5 other days of opportunities to reschedule. Dustin accepted them all. Judge Hayes did not. Sadly, this was expected. She had given herself an out when booking the time slot by saying she would debate only if there wasn't an emergency situation that came up. Thus, her swooning spell that canceled the debate. The paramedics found her to be okay. When it came to COVID, she was just missing in action, as she has been during this campaign season. While Dustin has been knocking on doors and hosting several town halls on all sides of our great county, Judge Hayes has been nowhere to be seen, refusing to even debate Dustin. He has continued to maintain his full-time job without missing a moment's time. Ector County residents deserve much better than someone who hides in a campaign like our current president Joe Biden did. We deserve someone who has tenacity, is active, passionate, energetic, and knowledgeable about the issues. That person is Dustin Fawcett. I urge you to vote for Dustin Fawcett for Ector County Judge in the Republican primary. Signed, Kathy Rhodes. This article is entitled Dance with the One Who Brung You, by State Representative Brooks Landgraf. Landgraf serves House District 81, which encompasses Andrews, Ector, Ward, and Winkler counties. If Texas was a cake, Permian Basin crude oil would be a necessary ingredient to bake that cake. You don't get the Texas we all know and love today without it. And as far as I'm concerned, Texas as we know it wouldn't exist without oil and gas. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm not opposed to any energy source that's supported by a free market, and heaven knows we have plenty of wind and sunshine here in the Permian Basin. However, history has proven time and time again that oil and natural gas are simply the cheapest and most efficient ways to produce energy across the globe. If you have compassion for those impoverished nations without access to clean water or electricity, oil and natural gas are a big part of the answer. If you want to see the United States continue to be a global force for good, oil and natural gas are freedom's fuels. That's why I'm thankful to be chairman of the Texas House Environmental Regulation Committee. European socialists and D.C. liberals are fighting tooth and nail to bring the Texas oil industry to its knees. So I'm honored to have a position of responsibility to defend our state's most vital industry and the West Texas way of life. And as you know, I take my role seriously. Earlier this month, AOC was in San Antonio, claiming that turning Texas blue was inevitable. I'm not sure what numbers she's seeing, but they're not the numbers I'm looking at. The Green New Deal champion will prove to be just as mistaken in her attempt to forecast Texas political winds as she is in her predictions of the planet's future weather patterns. As chairman of the House Environmental Regulation Committee, I squashed attempts to pass Green New Deal bills filed during the 2021 Texas legislative sessions. No bill that contained provisions of the Green New Deal, or that could otherwise harm Texas industries, made it out of committee. I know I'm preaching to the choir here. But it is, of course, possible to oppose AOC's Green New Deal and still want a clean and safe environment. The two are not mutually exclusive. Texas is beautiful. I get to see a lot of that beauty when I drive from one end of West Texas to the other and down to the Texas Capitol building in Austin. For one reason or another, I've been blessed to visit just about every corner of our great, big, beautiful state. Texas is indeed great. And I want to keep it that way. That's why I kill bad bills and pass good bills, like HB 4472 and HB 7, both bills that allow Texas to balance our environment and our economy in a way that's beneficial to both. As the 2022 primary election draws to a close, and we transition to the general election, my hope is that Texas voters will continue to be mindful of the importance of oil and gas to our state. It's not just about jobs or GDP in Texas. It is about public education funding, money to make our highways safer, the state's rainy day fund, and so much more. It seems like a decade ago now, but every American voter would do well to remember what it felt like in 2019 when the Saudi Aramco oil facilities were attacked, and the U.S. economy didn't skip a beat. As gas prices went up across the globe, they stayed steady in the United States because of Permian Basin oil production. For Texas and the U.S. to be at their best, the Permian Basin needs to be humming. We have the opportunity for energy independence, and we must seize the day now. It's been more than a century since the Santa Rita No. 1 first struck oil in the Permian Basin. Since then, Texas oil has helped the United States win two world wars and a Cold War on our way to becoming the most dominant superpower in human history. To willingly give that up is ludicrous, especially when we have had a taste of what energy independence could be like. I will not be complacent. I will continue to fight in every way possible to protect Texas energy jobs, the bedrock of the American dream. My advice to the new generation of Texas leaders who are seeking election or voting for the first time in 2022, dance with the one who brung you, Texas Black Gold. God bless Texas. This article is called Guest View. It is entitled, Hector County Needs Vision, Planning, by Dustin Fawcett. Fawcett is a candidate for county judge in the GOP primary. Roadways are perhaps the most important issue that county government must oversee. A long-standing issue with how our county government has been involved in roadway development has been the lack of vision, planning, and communication with all the entities involved. This must be fixed. I have worked intensely in the road development side of public policy, and I admit the process can be convoluted. Hector County roadways are a combination of state and federal highways under the jurisdiction of TxDOT, county roadways under the county, and the City of Odessa roadways under the city. With each of these various jurisdictions, the need for communication is of utmost importance. The Permian Basin Metropolitan Organization, MPO, is a transportation agency made up of Midland, Ector, and Martin County officials, City of Midland and Odessa, as well as the TxDOT Odessa District Engineer and the Easy Rider General Manager. This organization is tasked with ensuring that federal and state dollars are spent wisely and in accordance with the region's most vital needs. A problem that I have seen is that the MPO makes these decisions on the region's most vital needs without proper data, essentially leading to picking and choosing projects in a reactive rather than proactive fashion. The MPO, several years ago, was given hundreds of thousands of dollars, in the neighborhood of $700,000 last time I checked, in taxpayer funds to create a traffic demand model. I have previously brought this to the attention of the above-mentioned members of the MPO in an effort to begin data-based planning for our Ector County roadway system. Despite this allocation and subsequent software purchase, we have still yet to have this traffic demand model instituted. This model would scientifically identify constraint points, both current and future, based on the demographics and growth of our county. The MPO and its members need to once and for all utilize this demand model so that we are no longer guessing at projects, but instead being good stewards of taxpayers' dollars and choose projects that best benefit the citizens. Had we conducted this model, it is my belief that we would already have a plan on the books for the current and most certainly future problem of Loop 338 and State Highway 191 interchange on the east side of Odessa. We must begin the planning process for what this interchange needs to look like, as we are already seeing queuing backing up onto the main lanes of State Highway 191 to exit and enter Loop 338. We will soon be in a predicament that Midland was in with Loop 250 and State Highway 191 that is only now being resolved. With the amount of population growth in this region, we must be on the leading edge of vision for our infrastructure improvements, not just in this specific area, but everywhere. Making Loop 338 a fully functioning metropolitan loop must be a priority both for traffic flow concerns and for economic development. Further, we must begin looking at backage roads spurring off the loop. These backage roads are what ultimately unlocks the frontage of the loop to commercial businesses, beyond large oil and gas shops, to much more diversified complexes. There are needs everywhere in the county, from a traffic signal in Gardendale at the intersection of FM 554 and the newly expanded Cottonwood, to the improvements of freight corridors and main arteries in both West Texas and the Pleasant Farms area. Our vision is limited, and as a result, our traffic improvements have been as well. None of this is currently being talked about, let alone included in any planning documents. The planning process for any roadway project is a cumbersome and lengthy process. We must begin these conversations now. They should include the city, who would most likely end up annexing much of this property, about what kind of vision we have for the infrastructure development and resulting economic development that follows. For far too long, we have lacked vision and planning. Ector County residents have vision and planning in their personal lives and make decisions based on those two factors. Private businesses also must have a vision and a plan for them to succeed. Ector County government should do the same thing. This article is entitled "Send Putin a Message, Sink the Olga" by Dennis Elam. Dennis Elam is an associate professor at Texas A&M San Antonio and a 1966 graduate of Andrews High School, and blogs at www.themarketperspective.com. My prediction that Putin would stage an incursion into East Ukraine was incorrect. The recommendation to buy UNG, the natural gas ETF, has worked out well. But the predictions about the stock market, noting the major indexes which have topped since early November, was spot on. News of the invasion shot WTIC up $7 to near $100. Friday, it was trading just over $90. Team Biden has been playing into Putin's hand since the day they took office. Canceling the XL pipeline, approving the Nord Stream pipeline to Germany, and generally doing everything to strangle fossil fuel production has boosted oil to the century mark, making the Ukraine invasion far more affordable for Mr. Putin. That has come at some cost to Mr. Putin. The Russian stock market has lost 50% of its value in 3 days. RTSI Russian trading system has dropped from 1,400 to 743 this week. Team Biden never passed its signature Build Back Better multi-trillion dollar spending spree. He was worried about child care credits, not expanding the military, and, as noted, casting off any notion of U.S. energy independence. The total Russian economy is about the size of South Korea and smaller than Texas. Half of the economy is literally oil and gas. There is no consumer sector. Joe Biden will deliver his State of the Union message next Tuesday. Will he do what is necessary to make Mr. Putin back down? That would be approving Keystone XL, opening federal lands to drilling, and fast-tracking drilling and production permits. It is necessary for the U.S. to be energy independent and lower prices in the process. That takes money away from Mr. Putin. It would also make a dent in the number one worry of Americans, inflation. Oddly, Team Biden has yet to deny Russia the SWIFT banking global privilege. And Russian debt still trades in world markets. Why? Or will the Bernie Sanders and AOC progressive wing win the day? Critical observers will be counting the words on either side of that speech. The DJIA peaked just shy of 37,000 in early January. It now trades at 33,821, a drop of 8.5%. The tech-heavy NASD 100 topped at 16,750 and has now bounced off 13,250 to 14,150. This is a drop of 15% in less than 2 months. And most of that drop occurred before the Ukraine invasion. Consider a proxy stock like Applied Materials, AMAT. It topped along with the DJIA at 167 in January. Now it has dropped 19% to 135. The holy grail of social media is Facebook. Oops, make that Meta. Since early February, it is down from 330 to 210, a drop of 33%. All of this has precedent back to January 1973, when the markets began their eventual two-year 50% drop. We had an unpopular president, expensive gasoline, and lots of inflation then as well. Autocrats rarely get their due. The Castro brothers in Cuba have never missed a good meal, despite the U.S. sanctions. Let's make this personal. Mr. Putin's $100 million 270-foot yacht Olga, graceful, sailed from Germany to avoid being sanctioned, taken. Let's put our nuclear subfleet to good use. While in the Baltic Ocean, how about a couple of plain old World War II torpedoes to put the Olga out of commission, preferably in very deep water? That might be just the message the outgunned Ukrainians need right now.
This is Jane, reading for the Odessa American for Saturday, February 26th. Travis students celebrate Black History Month. Travis Magnet Elementary wrapped up its February with Black History Month celebration all day Friday, where students heard from prominent members of the community. Six different speakers shared words of wisdom and encouragement to each of the grade levels at the school. I'm so excited to bring together Black History Month, Travis Magnet Elementary Principal Amy Russell said. It's a culmination of what we've done all month long. So every day we've had a tribute to an African American from history, because I wanted to bring these historical figures that our students are learning about to figures that are here today in their community. Today's celebration is not about anyone from history, but it's African Americans that live here in Odessa and Midland and work here and raise their family here. So my students can say, hey, they look like me and sound like me. They have a dream. They're successful. And that's what I want to be. The speeches took place in the school's commons. Every speaker had an entire grade level that came in, Russell said. There were six speakers throughout the day, so each grade level got two opportunities to hear from the community. Attorney Gavin Norris, who is also a Travis alumni, was the first speaker of the day. He was followed by UTPB Director of Tickets and Game Operations, Marcus Bird. Bird told the kids what it means to be committed and showed them a multitude of different successful African Americans. I showed them from the start, with them being in poverty or being in low middle-income families, to how successful they became today. I told them it's important to be committed and be committed to their goals. Bird gave each student a card to write down what they wanted to be in the future, how committed they'll be to their goal, and how willingly they are to achieve that goal. My biggest advice I can say is be committed, Bird said. Like I share with these kids, it's very important to be committed and have perseverance when it comes to your goals. If you don't have that, then it's hard to achieve a lot of your goals. Retired administrator from Ector County Independent School District, Sheila Stevenson, was the next speaker. I wanted to share with the fourth graders at Travis all the good things about themselves, Stevenson said, who began her presentation by reading Maya Angelou's famous poem, And Still I Rise. The goal was to ensure all these young people understand the obstacles that are still in their way, but they can rise above them, Stevenson said. They rise above it by having confidence in themselves. They rise above it by not worrying about the haters. They need to just focus on themselves because they are indeed kings and queens, and we want them to have the best education that our system has to offer. Stevenson then brought up the background of the percussive, highly energetic art form known as stepping. I wanted the students here at Travis to understand that stepping started at black colleges and universities. When you step, it's a fun dance and routine. Now you're seeing it more today. First Baptist Church Stanton Youth and Music Minister Albert Hall also spoke at the event, as well as the UTPB Music and Communication Major Damian Christian and KMID-TV reporter and weather forecaster Bridget Sarpong. The celebration ended with a special reading and songs of celebration from the school's choir. Ashes to Go to take place in various places in Odessa. The season of Lent will begin with Ash Wednesday this coming week, and Connection Christian Church in Odessa will be doing Ashes to Go for its seventh consecutive year. Ashes to Go is a nationwide movement that has clergy and lay people visiting street corners, coffee shops, and grocery stores to mark the foreheads or hands of interested passers-by with ashes and invite them to receive a new start in their lives. It's a movement that takes the ancient tradition of Lent practices of getting ashes on the first day of Lent, and it takes it out of the walls of the church and into the community, Connection Christian Church, Pastor Don Weeks said. It fits perfectly with who our church is. We are a worshiping community that serves outside of our walls every day of the week, so this is just a microcosm of that. We love to interrupt people in unexpected places with the word of grace from God and the offer of ashes onto their forehead, and offer a prayer to begin that drawing near back to God that the season of Lent before Easter is there for. In the Christian tradition, Ash Wednesday marks the start of the holy season of Lent, which is a time for preparation for the celebration of Easter. For centuries, Christians have received a cross of ashes at the beginning of that season as a reminder of God's forgiveness. Ashes to Go provides people the opportunity to take part in that tradition especially those who may not be able to make it to Ash Wednesday services. We just heard about this and other churches doing it in other places, and nobody was doing it here. So we figured we'd give it a try, and that's how we got started, Weeks said. We've expanded where we're doing it since then. We'll have people say, "Oh, I was looking for you," or "I remember you from last year." It's fun. We've been so warmly welcomed by all the locations and also by the people that will stop by and allow us to have prayer with them. Ashes to Go will be offered from 7:30 to 8:30 a.m. at Stripes, located at Vaudrey Road and 191, and at 10 a.m. at Market Street on John Ben Shepherd Parkway, along with Odessa Episcopal Pastor Rick Lopez. "It's exciting," Lopez said. "I've done this for a few years now, and this will be the first time that I join forces, if you will, with Dawn Weeks at Connection Christian Church. It's exciting. It's a gift to be able to go out to the community and share this sacred moment with people." By participating in Ashes to Go, Lopez said, it is not only convenient, but also reminds Christians that God is everywhere. "Whether it's at Market Street or the hospital," Lopez said, "wherever we are, God is. This is an opportunity to really take that reminder to the streets, if you will. This is one of the rare opportunities where the ceremony itself lends itself, this reminder to the sacred mundane that God is wherever we are." Ashes to Go will also be offered at noon at the corner of Tanglewood and Pembroke, and from 4 to 5 p.m. at the HEB parking lot located at 42nd and Grandview. Ashes will also be offered at Connection Christian Church in an ecumenical worship service with First Presbyterian and Bethany Christian Churches. That evening at 7, our location will have four churches worshiping together to acknowledge that day, Weeks said. "We love that because it's all one church in heaven, so the distinctions should not make too much of a difference. So worshiping together for us is a foretaste of what's coming. We really value being in partnership with other churches and working together." UTPB partnering with Peak Sports Management. The University of Texas Permian Basin is getting organized when it comes to advertising, sponsorships, and ticket sales. It has inked an agreement with Peak Sports Management to have Peak manage and sell all UTPB athletics, including venue signage, program advertising, digital and web content, game sponsorships, and special events, along with several other opportunities. In addition, Allen-based Peak Sports Management will oversee multimedia rights, ticketing, enhance the UTP marketing brand, manage all outbound ticket sales, group sales, and premium hospitality, a news release said. The agreement with Peak became official February 8th. It is a five-year agreement with the option to extend it for another 5 years based on its success. Wesley Abercrombie, Vice President of Sales at Peak Sports Management, said the advertising helps raise money for the athletic department. "When you go to a football game and you see the signage on the field and those brands, our staff sells that to businesses in town or some national and regional brands as well," Abercrombie said. UTPB did not have an arrangement like this before. "We had no dedicated transactional giving arm. We didn't have anything that was dedicated in this manner. We did stuff on our own, but this professionalizes it," Dooley said. Abercrombie said Peak offers the university a financial guarantee of over $2 million over the course of the contract. They also offer two full-time staff members at UTPB. Interviews are currently being conducted. He said they are looking for a general manager for corporate partnership who will be selling advertising to businesses. Dooley said they hope to have the two new people on staff in March. Their primary goal is to display partnerships in the community while raising money for the athletic department. And then our ticket sales manager, their job is to increase attendance by selling tickets to the community as well and creating a great experience for people that do come to the games so that they'll come back. Dooley said adding 2 full-time staff members to the athletic department at no cost to benefit them is a huge benefit. Staffing is one of our major issues because we have so much of a workload on everybody. This helps diffuse some of that workload. We have somebody dedicated to selling athletics out in the community, somebody that's going to go knock on doors and meet with people. We've never had a dedicated outbound salesperson in the ticket office and somebody that can drive group sales, and season ticket sales for our home athletics is huge. Our goal is to expand revenue streams and find new ones, and this speaks directly to that, Dooley said. Abercrombie said Peak Sports Management is in 17 states, and they work mainly with 25 smaller schools, such as Eastern New Mexico University in Portales and Pittsburgh State University in Pittsburgh, Kansas. UTPB is our newest partner. Primarily, FCS Division II schools is who we work with. We're a small mom-and-pop company, so that's kind of the family feel that we like. We're trying to make a change in the industry of being that family-friendly company. We have competitors in the industry, and they're a little different than us, Abercrombie said. FCS stands for Football Championship Subdivision. Dooley said, in Division I, there are 2 types of football playing institutions. Their conference generally averages about 13 sports at each institution. So we've got to find a way to cover all of our expenses. Dooley said the university doesn't have to pay Peak anything for its services. That's the beauty of this business model, is they guarantee us a certain amount of revenue every year from corporate partnerships, and then they carry the cost of their expenses from a human resources standpoint. Then over a certain threshold, there's a revenue share that we both get to benefit from. It incentivizes them to reach that upper threshold where we can all start having some fun and making a lot of money, he added. Abercrombie said they have to sell enough to cover their salaries and then split the revenue once they cover that amount. All the money that we do make is earned. UTPB is not paying anything, he added. Abercrombie said that they wouldn't be at UTPB if they didn't see the potential. A lot of it has to do with Todd's vision. Another big part of it is the size of the market here, and we think that there's a lot of untapped potential because of that. I think those 2 things are big for us from a Peak Sports perspective. We want to work with people that want to work with us. That's why we partnered with Todd, and that's what's important to us. And then, of course, like I said, the market is there, so we know that the support is there, and we know that there's revenue to be raised, Abercrombie said. Dooley said the university is fortunate to be located somewhere that has the resources it does. I think about some of our peer institutions in the league. From a population standpoint, from a quality of life standpoint, we have a leg up in a number of areas, he added. Asked how many scholarships they're able to award right away, Dooley said that they would invest $2.1 million annually in athletic scholarships.
To Your Good Health by Dr. Keith Roach. Does aluminum cause cancer? Dear Dr. Roach, when Alzheimer's disease came to medical attention decades ago, some experts thought aluminum caused the disease and were concerned that antiperspirants containing aluminum might be dangerous. Should I be alarmed? I am also concerned that antiperspirants and deodorants might cause breast cancer. Answer. I also recall back in the 60s and 70s that aluminum was found in the brains of people with Alzheimer's disease, and there was concern that drinking from aluminum cans or cooking in aluminum pots might put people at risk. Many studies have looked at this and failed to demonstrate any risk for aluminum, whether ingested, and acids contain large amounts of aluminum, or used topically. Only antiperspirants contain aluminum. I don't think aluminum is a significant factor in Alzheimer's disease. The role of aluminum in breast cancer is not as well studied. Several small studies have shown no risk. However, one study interviewing women who had breast cancer suggested women who shave and use deodorants more at an earlier age of diagnosis. There are several reasons why this might be the case without concluding that aluminum causes breast cancer. The predominance of evidence shows no significant link between breast cancer and aluminum antiperspirants.
Family front and center in rekindled relationship. Dear Abby, I recently reconnected with an old boyfriend after 30 years, and I'm concerned about what I can only describe as codependency between him and his daughter. His wife of 20 years died 2 years ago after a long illness. He was her caregiver for the majority of those years, along with raising his daughter, who is now 21. He has a granddaughter as well, and they all live together. When I shared with him that I could only imagine how difficult it must have been for everyone and delicately suggested family therapy, he replied, "Everything will be all right in a while." The majority of our time is spent with his daughter and granddaughter. I have expressed my concern to him about spending together time as a couple, courting one another while we navigate dating and emotional and sexual intimacy at this phase in our lives. I am also concerned about him letting the granddaughter engage in adult interactions. There seems to be a lack of healthy boundaries in place. If everything is going to be all right, as he believes, why do I feel like I'm filling an empty space with no foreseeable returns in this family dynamic? Signed, confirmed divorcee for now. Dear divorcee, you and your old boyfriend need to have a frank discussion about what you can expect from this relationship. Certain things are private. Courting and emotional and sexual intimacy should take place away from his home, preferably on your turf. If he doesn't see the wisdom in that and isn't prepared to compromise, end the romance and waste no more of your time. Dear Abby, my brother-in-law, Harvey, has a filthy habit of chewing tobacco in my home and around my family. He has promised many times to not do it when he visits, but has broken his word every time. The children are grown now, but there are grandchildren. Harvey is a dirty, unhygienic man who wipes his chew-covered hands on his jeans and leaves a trail of chew and spittle everywhere. He spits into soda cans and leaves the cans on the end table. One time, my 2-year-old tipped it up and took a swig, thinking it was soda. It has been 25 years now, and I'm ready to ban him from my home and family get-togethers. My husband feels pity for him. He and my mother-in-law baby Harvey like a child. I'm ready to lay down the law, and I know there will be hell to pay, but I cannot take this any longer. What do you think? Signed, Haddad in Washington. Dear Haddad, frankly, I think that after 25 years, you're a little late trying to lay down the law to Harvey. You should have put your foot down when your 2-year-old mistook Harvey's spittoon for a soda. Whether you can enforce banning your brother-in-law from your home is anybody's guess, but I suppose it's worth a try if you're willing to accept the consequences. An alternative might be to entertain him only during the milder months when you can do it outside.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.